Well, hello there, and welcome to Food Lab Talk. I'm your host, Michael Bakker. Today's guest is Olivia Thomas. Olivia is a registered dietitian with broad experience across both academia and healthcare. As the Director of Nutrition Innovation and Implementation at Boston Medical Center, she's responsible for driving cutting-edge nutrition programs that have a profound impact on patients' outcomes. She wears many hats, serving as a consultant at Penn State Health, a course creator and instructor at Columbia University's Culinary Medicine Program, and a co-chair of the Member Strategy Committee of the Teaching Kitchen Collaborative. Olivia is also an entrepreneur and the co-founder of Rewire Health, a cutting-edge culinary medicine platform that simplifies healthy home cooking and expands access to teaching kitchens beyond the hospital setting, which includes the Pursuit app. Welcome to the show, Olivia. Happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Olivia, to get things started, can you tell us a little bit more about how you got started working in culinary medicine and what led you to where you are today, working in this interesting intersection of clinical, academia, and technology?
Yeah, absolutely. So my love for food started at a really young age. I grew up with a single parent, and my parent worked, and I had to do the cooking. And so I started playing around with food and feeding my siblings and figuring out what tastes good, what they'd eat. And then that kind of chore turned into a passion, which then turned into my career path, and I became a dietitian. I always say that I don't have enough attention to detail to be a chef, so I became a dietitian. And also, I like healthy food, but really it's a love for food first. And I know my background seems a little disorganized and all over the place, but to me, it's attacking a problem from multiple directions. And I see the potential of food systems on health, and for that reason, I'm really excited to get involved in many different ways.
So then the other one I have to ask you about, culinary medicine or food as medicine, is there a distinction from your perspective between the two?
Okay. Food as medicine or food is medicine are food-based interventions to help manage chronic diseases. And culinary medicine is the application of nutrition science to real food and behavior. So food is medicine is the umbrella term, and culinary medicine is one service under that umbrella.
Got it. And then, so with your interest, how did you go from the big tent to ultimately a much smaller tent?
Yeah, so I actually went the opposite direction. I started in a very small tent, which is culinary medicine. So addressing people's medical food needs through cooking skills, to then understanding food is medicine, understanding that people both need access to those ingredients and there's a whole food system that needs to be addressed before you can look at the behaviors and the skills.
All right, Olivia, I get it. But now for the listeners, make culinary medicine really real. Give us an example of what it is it truly is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think about it in two ways. I think about one, learning new skills, and two, being reinforced for things you already do and like to do. And so oftentimes culinary medicine is offered in a group setting. So there's lots of people there. And we have a recipe that we'll cook together. And as part of the cooking process, we're talking about the ways you would do it at home. So it's not about me teaching a recipe from every ingredient the way I would do it, but rather a conversation. And along the way, you're learning like tips and tricks. So maybe salting at the end of the meal instead of throughout, which I know is going to burn the ears of the chefs listening, but for helping manage the amount of salt in your food, it's a great strategy. Or maybe it's beefing up a meal with more vegetables. And I think that's always my favorite story, because oftentimes in the beginning of a class series, people will say they hate vegetables. And I've seen that in surveys, that that's the reason they don't eat healthy, because they hate vegetables. But then when you dig deeper, you realize people eat a ton of vegetables. They just don't think of it as like a side of broccoli. So things like salsas or tomato sauces or harissa paste, like these are peppers and tomatoes. And so sometimes it's not about me teaching a new skill, but educating that things you already like are vegetables. You don't need to have a side salad. Like I'm a dietitian and I eat a lot of things that are not salad. So just encouraging the types of food people already like to eat.
Got it. And then maybe going back a little bit to your broader background, you have multiple roles today, Penn State, Boston, your own startups. Tell me a little bit about ultimately all these different parts of your weekly puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely. So the day job is at Boston Medical Center, where I run our culinary medicine program, as well as other food as medicine interventions. And then I consult for other organizations to help them create programs just like the one that I work at my day job. And then the startup Rewire Health, and Pursuit is the app under the Rewire Health brand, helps fill the gaps. So things that I couldn't do within a system that needed to be created outside the system.
So an entrepreneur over here. Tell me a little bit about your journey. So how did you get started? And where are you at with your startup so far? Or is it already a grown-up?
It's for sure a startup. So I was working in culinary medicine, and I was living with my sister at the time. And I would come back from work feeling really defeated, that I didn't have enough resources for patients, that I couldn't personalize information, and that what they were learning in this group setting was kind of a hard sell to do at home. So it worked in this kitchen that I could provide the food and the equipment and the time, but then how it looked on a Tuesday night after you picked up your kids was a different story. And so my sister at the time was working in medical devices, and for a startup, kind of had that startup mindset. And so we competed in a pitch competition just as an idea, and we ended up winning. And we took that pitch like idea to an MVP that we piloted at a few different like organizations that I had already been working with. And then from there, we're now 3 years old, and we went from Pursuit App to Rewire Health as kind of a broader both service and platform.
Talk to me a little bit more about the platform itself. So what should I envision with that?
Yes. So it is a personalized and culturally affirming culinary medicine digital platform that offers resources and experiences tailored to a person's preferred language, preferences, and access. So you build your own adventure within culinary medicine.
Walk me through what that would mean for me. So I found your platform. I sign up for the app. What is going to happen to me next?
Yes, so you answer three questions and you're given a recipe library. And you can choose a recipe like you would on any platform. But once you're in the recipe, you can change out the ingredients to things that you like, you have on hand. And for communities of people that I work with, access is always a major challenge. And so changing recipe content to what people already have versus what they need is a huge priority. And so you change out your ingredients, and that actually changes the whole recipe on the back end using our tech, and then provide you a new recipe based on the foods you have or that you chose.
Got it. And then out of curiosity, from how do you grow your business? From who are your primary audience members, and actually how do they find you?
Yes. So this is why we are a startup, because we are figuring these things out now in real time. We started as a software as a service company. We had a platform, and we're going out into the world selling this culinary medicine platform, but no one knows what culinary medicine is. So now we're working backwards, and we provide services to help you build a culinary medicine program, and then you buy our platform, because we realized that we were selling something that no one knew how to use it.
So is it unfair to say that your primary audience are either hospitals or health institutions that are creating these programs for their members?
Yes, or community-based organizations. Most of our current partners are different food as medicine programs, being food assistance or produce prescriptions. And then we do have some health systems that we work with.
Got it. And how do you differentiate your solution from, I would guess, there are probably more than one out there?
Well, there's not more than one culinary medicine platform. So I think that alone is unique to us. And it's the personalization on a real level. So a lot of education talks about, sure, yeah, we give recommendations to make it work for you. But does the content actually change based on the language you speak, the foods you prefer? And is it delivered in a way that allows you to engage with it and learn? And so we use multimedia education. So there's video and audio and written text. And so you kind of build your own adventure. And that's really important when it comes to food, because we all come from different food backgrounds. And it's hard to build something for everyone. So this way you get to choose what that looks like.
Yeah. If I can maybe tie back to the theme of this series, the quest to enable individuals to make informed, personally relevant food choices So what I hear you say is that you would enable meat to make ultimately personal food choices. Is there a link as well between what I need versus what I want? How do you help meat to identify what I truly need?
Remember I said there's like four onboarding questions. So you're only given things that are okay for your medical needs, that are in the language you speak and that use the equipment you already have. So you're not given things that you're not going to be able to eat or use. And the recommendations are as broad as possible. We try to include as many food types as possible within a kind of medical focus. So there are always like grains and vegetables, and you'll choose within a list what you would like to eat.
And you're a chef. I like to cook as well. So where do you get the recipes from?
So it started with me creating them, and I quickly learned that not everybody wants to eat what I want to eat. And so most of them are sourced from our partners, and oftentimes they're kind of co-created with community members. And so each of our partners will help us build a recipe library that they feel represents the community they serve or they work with. And that can be from their own dietitians providing content to patients or members or just general people in the community. Each partner is very different.
Got it. I'm going to take us back up again before we go really deeper into the good stuff. So I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about the bigger picture, food systems as a whole. Question for you. What elements do you believe are critical to a truly sustainable food system? And then how do you see your role in helping making sustainable food systems a reality? Easy peasy question.
Yeah, we could talk about that all day. Well, I work mostly in the consumer side or the end of the spectrum. So the types of food people receive or what they do with that food. And what I'm learning more about, and so I'm going to say this as a learner myself and not an expert, I believe there needs to be shifts around thinking of food access as care in perpetuity or charity and more towards economic mobility. And so within the food as medicine space, I would love to see more resources spent on investing into local food systems and helping communities of people through food investment versus us providing food for people within a community.
And then you being an entrepreneur and a co-founder of a technology platform. So what in your experience is the role of emerging technologies or innovations in contributing to those sustainable and resilient food systems?
It makes life easier. It makes administrative tasks, content developing, writing, something that's really easy so you can spend your time on other things. And so I love technology. I am not the most tech literate person, but I'm very open to tech solutions to help make my job easier. And so for Rewire, for example, we build most of our content using different AI tools so that I can spend more time in the implementation part of a platform, which is the hard part, getting people to use it. So I think it's a benefit that more people should take advantage of.
Got it. And building upon that, as a culinary medicine expert, how do you stay adaptive and responsive to the, what I would consider, evolving science of nutrition and the changing dynamics of food systems?
That's a good question. I think people in nutrition like to learn because I think you have to because the science changes all the time. So part of the profession is constantly learning and growing and adapting. I know my own eating patterns change constantly based on what I learn. But I think the practice of culinary medicine isn't about me necessarily. It's more about the person we're working with. And so I'm more interested in the person I'm working with to tell me what they like to do, what they like to eat. And then I infuse science as needed, or I help gently tailor concepts based on maybe a medical goal that they have. But really, it's not about me learning the most sophisticated science and making people change. It's hearing what people are already doing and then helping shift, if needed, some of their behaviors.
Yeah. And then as you're actually working on a technology solution for, I think, something that is very personal, very, very interesting, but challenging, food behavior changes. So do you deeply believe that ultimately technology is the core driver of behavior change? Is it an enabler? And how do you ultimately end up with believing it is an app versus something else that is going to be the biggest driver of change?
Yeah, so I think I want to answer this two ways. The first is through my own research. We did a survey at Boston Medical Center of about 1,200 patients and focus groups, and we asked, how do you like to receive nutrition education? And it was all over the map. Some people want tech, some people want a person, some people hate a dietitian and want to talk to peers, some people only want to talk to an expert. And from that research, I learned that there isn't really one solution, that you need it all. You need in-person groups, you need virtual learning, you need cool digital platforms, and they all need to be offered because it'll suit different people's needs. And so that's my first answer. Secondly, I do love technology, so I navigate that direction. And I do think it's a sustainable tool that's in your pocket. And so if I can have a person practice something small, like not salting at the dinner table, but instead adding citrus every day, and their app can remind them to do that, then I think that that is actually a very effective intervention. And so the fact that a phone is in your pocket and something you use daily makes it very appealing for me and my goals towards behavior change for a person.
Yeah. And as an entrepreneur that is growing her business, how do you ultimately track whether your app is making the impact that both you want it to be and then the user itself?
Good question. We've had to change our North Star multiple times based on how people have used our technology. At first, we thought it was going to be this daily learning data collecting tool where we would see how people would improve their knife skills. Now we look at it more like, did you log in twice a week? And if you did, what did you choose? And for us, that's still a win because you're still practicing skills in a routine way a couple times a week. And so although I do hope one day it's used at every meal every day and we're collecting enormous amount of data, realistically, at least for now, it's more of an engagement tool. If you log in once or twice a week, we feel like that was a success.
Got it. The most of our guests throughout the seasons of Food Lab Talk have talked about the importance of collaboration and community building. In the culinary medicine world, how does collaboration with other professionals, such as potentially farmers or chefs or policymakers, work for you?
It's essential. It is absolutely essential. I think, what is it? If you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So I'm a dietitian. So everything to me looks like a nutrition consideration, and I want to address it through what I know to be true. But in reality, these things are dynamic and require a lot of different problem solvings. And so I find most of my favorite partnerships are outside of the healthcare system. So I love working with my doctors on interprofessional teams in the clinical setting, but I really love working in community and working with local food suppliers and makers and really just learning different ways of interacting with food. And then how can I help amplify their messaging? And I feel like to me, that's the best learning. And one of the organizations that does that the best is Corbin Hill Food Project in New York. And I have learned an enormous amount from the work they do, and they've been one of my greatest partners.
So let's dig a little deeper into enabling individuals to make informed, personally relevant food choices. What do you think is enabling individuals to make food choices?
I like the term culturally affirming because I think people already do a lot of wonderful things that promote their health, but they don't feel like they have permission because traditionally nutrition science and nutrition education is very westernized and the science is correct, but we are perpetuating a way of living that not everyone connects with or relates to. And so I think creating culturally affirming recommendations to let people feel good about the things they already do that are helping their health is a really big driver.
And then building upon that, to me, it feels that cultures all over the world are meshing up. And that I think it becomes even harder to say from this is culture A, B, or C, because it's such an interesting just mixture. How do you work on that as you're developing recipes?
Well, that's why we developed Rewire Health. So I was teaching a class earlier in my career for pregnant people. And I was all excited. It was going to be about breakfast, easy breakfast on the go. I had all my recipes picked out. I had my set up in the kitchen. And I had six patients come, all from very different ethnic racial backgrounds. And everyone looked confused. And I'm going on and on and talking and teaching. And everyone's disengaged. They're looking out the window. And I asked, what's wrong? Why isn't this helping? And no one ate breakfast. It's just not what they did. It's not what their family did. And since everyone was from a different background, I was really confused on where to take the conversation because I didn't know who to kind of like teach to. And then I realized it wasn't about that. It was about the conversation. And so I stopped talking. Everyone else in the class started telling me about their favorite breakfast and people were connecting and like, oh, I love that, or I've never tried that. And it became this very like sharing moment that to me opened my mind. And so I think it's not about necessarily always representing everyone all the time, but it's having open conversations and being good listeners. Be if you're the provider or another patient, it's having that opportunity to share. And so Rewire Health does not make assumptions on the way you eat, you choose it. And so you can choose one seasoning and a different vegetable that maybe traditionally don't go together, but they go together in your house. And as long as you like it, I don't care. Like, it's up to you. It's your taste. You choose what you want to cook.
Yeah. I think in the questions I have so far, it's almost like I imply that enabling individuals to make personally relevant food choices, it's about information or education. But I think your organization, you believe that in addition to information, it is about behavior change as well. And I was peeking at your website yesterday, and I found that you believe there are three core functions to accelerate behavior change: personalization, practice, and insight. Could you talk a little bit more about those three functions?
Yeah, absolutely. So personalization, you're cooking things you want to cook, that you're excited about, that you have access to, that you feel good about doing. Repetition, you need to do it again and again. So maybe you use the trick about lemon at the end of the meal instead of salt, but I don't care what you've done once. I want to see you do it every single day and it becomes your go-to. So instead of reaching for the salt, you're reaching for the lemon. And then feedback, data. So understanding what you're doing well and where you need to improve, I think it keeps all of us engaged. And so that data part doesn't normally happen in culinary medicine. There's not really a way to capture. And that's what I'm also interested in figuring out. How can I provide more information for you so you can keep your journey going? Because it'll be a lifetime. It's not just a one-time, one-and-done deal.
Yeah. So, Olivia, what our listeners always love to hear are personal stories. So over the years, you've probably touched a variety of individuals. Can you give us a good example of ultimately an individual that has been touched by your culinary medicine program?
Yeah, absolutely. I immediately think of a patient that was part of a study where they were given medically tailored meals and then graduated to medically tailored meal kits and Rewire Health's digital platform. And we were curious if that was a great like step down program, if people would find it helpful, if they'd miss the meals. And we actually heard totally the opposite. People were so excited to learn skills and to share foods with their families. And so I remember one patient specifically said that she felt selfish that she kept getting meals and like everyone else in her family had to eat other things that they had to make. And so going through a meal kit with a platform that was teaching skills helped her feed her whole family. And then her son started helping. And then that's my favorite part of the story. She said that up until kind of this project, she thought her son hated things that were green, but then having him help in the kitchen made him love broccoli. And so to me, even if her palate hadn't changed, she now has changed the palate of her son, which for me is prevention. So that was like a really exciting moment.
Then just going back to culinary medicine. So you're a dietitian. What about medical professionals that you get to work with? How far along are they from your point of view on the journey to accept that food has such an incredible impact on health and well-being?
I'm seeing the shift happening now, which is really exciting. So more and more doctors are engaged. I teach Eat to Treat, which is a course for medical students at Boston University. I've helped develop other courses for other organizations. And I'm doing a 12-hour workshop in a couple of weeks at OMA, which is a conference for obesity medicine. And we have 200 people, and I think almost half of them are physicians. So they're excited. And that makes me really excited. But I like to say yes, and normally my messaging is yes, so excited, you're excited, and refer to your dietitian. Like, you don't need to champion this. There are people often in your clinical settings that can help you do this. You don't need to become the food expert, but you can refer out to people who are.
Understood. The other one, when you think about ultimately personal food choices, there might be the implication or this implied belief that it's about the individual's ability to affect food choices. But at the same time, we're all part of ultimately a food environment. So what are your thoughts about the balance between personal agency and you being part and exposed to all kinds of food environments that might not be helping you?
I think the most work that needs to be done is in the latter, is in the food systems. I've just been trained to work on the individual level. And so the work I do is related to choice, but where I see the most work needed is on the system. And so I partner with another dietitian who's an expert on the farm bill. And so I'm not myself an expert, but I definitely am learning more and trying to understand how I can impact some of the regulations that support the types of foods we grow, how we reimburse for food. And then within food is medicine, that does matter because that's the food that then trickles down to different food access services.
Got it. So I'm back to technology over here. So if I'm well informed, your app Pursuit helps people train their brain while they're cooking in the short term to make the healthy eating the default lifestyle in the long term. So how do you train somebody's brain short term?
Yes, providing easy to follow instructions. And that's the learning process in a nutshell. So you are following instructions over and over again, and it's helping you facilitate that behavior over and over again. And over time, you'll learn that behavior. And so this whole idea started, I read the book Thinking Fast and Slow, and my mind was like blown. There's a system one, there's a system two. I'm teaching to one system, but I need to be teaching to the other. And so both can be true. You can be learning in the moment while building habits that sustain consciousness that you just do automatically. And that's the behavior I would love to influence, but it does take commitment from a person. So it has to be easy enough that they can do it and they can do it again and again and again. If scratch cooking was the only solution, then no one would be able to practice it. But could it be small little things like putting together a few prepared foods to start that you can practice and then build skills over time?
I get it. A deeper question over here for you, Olivia. So diet and lifestyle interventions as part of Food is Medicine programs have gotten a lot of recent attention in the US. In preparation for the interview, I read your article where you mentioned that culinary education, while effective at changing behavior, is time consuming. And on the other hand, medically tailored meals are simple and effective at reducing healthcare use, but do not lead to long-term changes. So, what's to do?
It all needs to exist. We need medically tailored meals for days you don't have time to cook, and we need skill-building tools for when you do. And in one person's life, that may ebb and flow in a week, in a month, based on chronic disease management, based on family planning. There are a lot of factors. And so, I personally don't believe there's one solution. I think people should have rights to prepared, healthful food, and they should have rights to learning new skills and being better culinary medicine advocates in their home, but both need to be there because they're two ends of a spectrum and they're both not a solution by themselves.
Got it. So our biggest audience on this show tends to be change makers working hard in food systems. And you have actually done quite a bit in different parts of the system. What advice would you have for change leaders, especially for affecting change in complex systems like food systems?
So again, this is not my area of expertise, but it's an area that I am a student in and learning about. And I think it's sovereign systems. I think we need to be focusing on how can, especially within food as medicine, resources be used to reinvest into disinvested communities, which perpetuates food access. I have been redefining how I work on projects based on the impacts I have on every step, where a food source, what foods am I marketing, who is it benefiting, how is the data being used? And I think the idea of sovereignty is important and making sure that it aligns with the communities we're focusing on and working with. And again, that's an area I'm not expert on, but I'm learning about, especially from Corbin Hill Food Project.
Yeah. And if you knew then what you know today, if you think about the start of your company, anything you would have done differently 3 years ago?
I think to be a better listener. I think I got really excited and wanted to tackle big problems before I spent enough time listening. And now I listen a lot more than I act. And I think for that reason, I'm more impactful. I'm used to I'm resilient. I'll just keep going at a problem. And maybe that's not always the best, but rather taking a step back and listening and understanding and then acting. And so that's my advice for most people. Take a little bit more time than you would think to understand a market and a problem. Ask around. There's probably already people who are expert on the topic, and then act.
Well said. Now a little bit looking into the future with your company and the work that you do. What do you believe the future holds for culinary medicine? And how might aspiring change makers prepare themselves to meet the challenge of tomorrow's food systems?
So I do see culinary medicine being the best pedagogy of nutrition education. It's food-based learning, using all of your senses in experiential ways. And like everyone learns that way. That's how you learn to ride a bike. You get outside, you get on your bike, you put your helmet on. That's how you learn to drive. You get in your car. It only makes sense to talk about food and nutrition in a kitchen where you can taste and feel and interact. And so I do see culinary medicine becoming the way to teach nutrition. And I think it should be. And then for technology, I hope to see lots of innovations. I think there's so many opportunities and I'm really excited about them. I'm trying to understand how I can get like a chef chatbot GPT in the app to help real time answer questions. And I'm not an expert on tech, so I would love to see from other technology companies some really cool innovations.
Yeah. And then building upon that, 3 years from now, where do you see your company be?
Hopefully we make it. That would be great. Hopefully we're still around. I think we will be. And where I hope to see it is a marketplace. I hope that it's not my content on there, but it's all of our partners. And we see diverse representation in the information in our providers themselves. I hope that we can enhance the work other organizations are doing through a platform. And so over the next 3 years, I hope to do less content and do more hosting of other people's great work.
Olivia, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to hear more about your work and your journey. Truly, truly enjoyed it.
Yes, me too. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I started listening to your podcast and now I'm a big fan. So you have another listener.
Reflecting on today's interview, here are my top three takeaways for change makers. To be a good leader, you have to be a good listener. Active listening is an essential skill for understanding diverse perspectives and tailoring solutions. By truly hearing others, leaders can build trust and make more informed decisions that will drive impact. Successful change makers recognize that no single solution fits all. As someone who works on many parts of the food system, education, intervention, behavior change, Olivia's proof that navigating complex systems demands a multidimensional approach. Effective solutions emerge when we explore different angles, consider creative solutions, and provide multiple pathways to address challenges. Redefine your approach to problem solving by focusing on impact. On today's episode, Olivia shared a little bit about her own learning journey as it relates to food sovereignty. To advance this impact, she asked herself questions like, who am I benefiting? Or, how is the data being used? This helps ensure her solutions empower and uplift the communities she serves. For more information about the Rewired Health platform and other topics discussed in today's show, be sure to check out the show notes. And thank you for joining us for this episode. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the podcast at foodlabtalk.com or wherever you listen to your podcast. And be sure to follow us on LinkedIn and YouTube at Food Lab Talk. As we close, I invite you to pursue your own bold vision and take whatever action you can take toward a better food system. Imagine, believe, and most importantly, act. See you next time.